And so I'm going to ask you, if I asked you to be on the panel to talk about Baptist heritage, that I need you to come forward. I have your names if you don't know that, but these are your seats right here. And it's Lindsay, and it's Desmond, Ezrin, Alabwe, Kamau, and Ruben Chuga, I think, are the ones who are on the panel. I asked these panelists to be on the front here because they represent different aspects of our continent. Now, down on the very end is my good friend Godfrey Harold. And Godfrey is not geographically oriented this morning, although he does serve in Cape Town Baptist Theological Seminary. But he actually is representing the Asian Baptist perspective. And he has some things to share about that. Ezrin Musonda there is in Zambia, and he's going to help us with Central Africa. And then we have Dr. Ruben Chuga, who is from Kaduna, Nigeria. That's Anglophone West Africa. We have Francophone West Africa here, who's very cold with his head covered, Dr. Alabwe. And and then we have representing East Africa, Reverend Kamau. And then we have Desmond Henry, and we also have Lindsay Rehnquist, who are talking to us about Southern Africa. Are we together? Are we good? Is the light in your eyes, guys? Okay, all right. So I've got several questions that I thought we could go through. I've already said all this already. Forgive me. But let's talk a little bit about history. Maybe, and we're probably not going to have time for everybody, and you can pass the mics. But tell us as best you can how theological education among Baptists began in your part of the world. In other words, what were the key places, who were the key players, and how was it characterized in terms of teaching, languages, methods, things like that? Maybe just take a few minutes, and we'll start with Godfrey, and we can pass the mic down.
I am South African with Indian descent, but I think my affiliation with India allows me the privilege of speaking to that particular context, and more specifically the fact that in 1818, William Carey began Serampore College, which was the first university to be established in India. So literally the secular university system owes its allegiance to Baptist heritage in India. So we're thankful to the Lord for that. Then in 1864, Jewett went to a place called Andhra Pradesh, worked in Tamil Nadu for a while. In 1860, developed Baptist Central Seminary, which trained John Rangia, who came to South Africa in 1904 and started the South African or the Indian Baptist mission. So we have a fair amount of American Baptist influence, in the sense prior to I think the breakup, so the split. So literally our heritage comes directly from American Baptist through Jewett and through Rangia. And then there are many evangelical churches in South Africa, Indian evangelical churches that are Baptistic. The South African Evangelical Church of South Africa, which has a direct influence from a Baptist from Australia. And the Evangelical Church, the Evangelical Bible Church, which is also very Baptistic and a fair amount of Baptistic influence. So while the Evangelical Baptist Church, the Evangelical and Baptist churches, predominantly KZN, are Baptistic, Evangelical, and Indian, they owe much to the influences in India. I trust that gives us some history.
On the aspect of Central Africa, I think that the story begins in 1950, and that it begins in Zimbabwe, southern Rhodesia at that time. And I think the first missionaries and the key players were the Dodsons, Clyde Dodson and Ralph Bolin. And these are the men that were in the forefront and the leadership of the mission. in Zimbabwe at that time, Southern Rhodesia. And sometime when the Dodsons had gone on holiday, which we call fell off, the missionaries, some that remained behind, agreed that they needed to establish a seminary, or a leadership training center for leaders. And they proposed Sanyati. So Sanyati is a very important place among Baptists and in Southern Rhodesia. And it was proposed that they would start a seminary there. But the Dodsons had already sort of won in Harare, Salisbury then. But thereafter, they had bought land in Gweru. And that's where now they have a seminary. And I can say briefly that they started the seminary in 1955. And after some time, they were joined by people coming from Malawi and from Zambia, and they were studying there. But it happened in 1965. There was UDI, the Unilateral Declaration of Independence. The border between Zimbabwe and Zambia got closed, and so there was no access. And so it was necessary for the Zambians to begin theirs. But by then, before that, there was already a mission that had already gone to start and to do a survey in Zambia and Malawi and Tunduan, just to start new work by the Baptist mission. But this was kind of a blessing for the Zambian churches that the UDI caused us now to have our own seminary. And so our seminary began in 1969. And that was the first group of students. And then there was a misunderstanding between the students and the mission. And so there was a suspension of the school. But then those who needed to apply, they could apply. Only one couple came back, but they were new students in September 1969. And so it continued. And up to today, that work has flourished with so many other Bible schools being added to it. And so we are so grateful. Malawi also used to send theirs to Zimbabwe, but also now start sending their students to Zambia also. So that's about the story, how it began.
I speak specifically for Nigeria, but by extension, West Africa. Baptist mission presence started in Nigeria. Now the area today called Nigeria. It wasn't Nigeria then. In 1850, the first Southern Baptist missionary, Jefferson Bowen, came to Nigeria. And if you know Nigeria, most of West Africa, to the far north of that area is savanna, and the savanna grows into a desert. It was easier for Islam to come through the north, and it was faster. When you are coming from the south, there's a forest. So mission work was impeded by movement from the south to the north. Also, too, there were lots of conflicts, tribal conflicts. It wasn't easy for people to move from one ethnic group to another. Even within the ethnic group that Jefferson worked with, the Yorubas, there were conflicts between them. So I say this so we understand the slow pace of movement of Christian influence from the south to the north, and how easy it was for Islam to move from the north to the south. Actually, where Islam stopped in its progression to the south was a forest. As they progressed into the forest region, they couldn't move fast. They came on horses, and so they couldn't move fast into the forest. So from Ilorin downward, they were going into forest. So literally stopped. and the Christian influence was slowly moving. This is just my genetic. You won't find it in any history. For theological education, the first theological institution to be started in all of West Africa, maybe I need to say the whole of Africa, possibly, was the Womasho. Now, it started very simply by Reverend Smith, and it started as a small school to train evangelists in 1896. And it moved from one place to another where the missionary moved, the school moved with him. He was the school. And wherever he moved, the school moved. He was the principal, he was the dean, he was the registrar, he was everything. And he was the library. So he was everything. So the school moved from place to place until it eventually settled in a Womasho. And there it stayed till this time. It started very simply. It was to teach in Nigeria. Now, it wasn't Nigeria actually. It was no Nigeria until 1914. We're talking about 1898. So in that region of West Africa, there was no other language other than little ethnic groups. So there was no language to connect the people. So Smith had to learn Yoruba. Just like if you came here, you had to learn what? Swahili. And that would take you years of learning. So he had to teach himself first. Then teach the student. And it started that simple. Training evangelists. Then it progressed into a school, a formal theological school. The emphasis initially was just train people who will understand the Bible and preach to others. It came as simply as that. They were not thinking of some great theologians. They were not thinking, it's just to pass the message. That was the emphasis initially. But over time, as the colonial institutions were developing educational institution. Then there was a need to also upgrade theological education. And the seminary in Obumasho also kept growing. And the seminary in Obumasho became the first degree awarding institution in Nigeria. The first degree awarding of all schools, all secular. So we have a history of being the first degree awarding institution in Nigeria. The Baptist people have that to their credit. I think Dr. Lee Lola will help me out. Ibadan was the first Nigerian university. It started its degrees in 1958, 2 years after Womasho offered degrees. Now, over time, other theological institutions were started by the Baptist work. As the Baptist work was growing and spreading all over the country, the convention was started in 1914, Nigerian Baptist Convention. And the convention was growing, and there was need for training of pastors in other parts. Now, I told you, English became our official language, but English was not very popular. Not everybody could speak English. So they had to establish theological institutions in different parts of the country speaking vernacular, local language. Local languages were used in the training. Over time, as education generally was improving in the country, theological education among the Baptists was also growing. Now had diploma programs and developed degree programs in our theological institutions. Today, Nigerian Baptist Convention has 10 theological institutions spread all over the country. Now, the nature of Nigeria requires that schools be studied that way. Nigeria is pretty large geographically. It is large in terms of population also. It is culturally diverse. So there was the need for the Nigerian Baptist Convention to start schools in this way. We would have had more schools, theological schools, than this. But the convention had to stop at one point because of funding. Schools had to be properly funded. If you started too many, you wouldn't be able to fund them. So they stopped. At one point they said, okay, no more theological schools. So we stopped some years ago, and we want to develop these ones, maintain standards, fund them properly, and be able to monitor them and sustain them. This is where we are.
I speak for East Africa. The Baptist Mission came from Nigeria to East Africa in 1956. And in 1959, they met here in Limuru after having planted churches in Tanzania and Kenya. They had a problem with Uganda because of the political situation. And when they met in Limuru in 1959, that is when they came up with a resolution to start a seminary for the East Africans. And in 1962, the Arusha Baptist Seminary was started, and it had students from Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania. However, the level of literacy in East Africa was very low. And due to that, most of the missionaries would not direct people, the church leaders, the Arusha Seminary. And out of that, the missionaries decided to start what we call Bible schools, which were taught in local languages. The missionary would start a Bible school within his locality and would teach the pastors, who are basically literate, on how to read, and most of the times they would teach them how to memorize scripture, and as they memorize scripture, then they would use that for their training or for their preaching in their churches. And therefore, in East Africa, there were several Bible schools that were started in different parts of East Africa as a whole by the Baptist missionaries. The Arusha Seminary basically was training people who were literate, people who would study either in Swahili or English. And the Bible schools grew, and at the same time, they came up with the program, the theological education by extension program, also to be able to reach people who could not come to the seminary. And that's how the theological education among the Baptists started in East Africa.
Desmond here, representing the Baptist work in South Africa, and particularly the Baptist Union of Southern Africa. In 1820, the first settlers arrived on the shores of South Africa, and so next year we'll be celebrating 200 years of a Baptist witness in South Africa itself. Quite a special moment. But the first settlers were British and had an agreement with the London Missionary Society that they wouldn't do any evangelism among the local people, indigenous people. And so they continued for a number of years until 1954 or so, when the German Baptists came under the leadership of someone by the name of Carl Hugo Gutscher, who within about a decade established 30 different churches debt-free within primarily the Eastern Cape region. In 1877, the Baptist Union was formed, and a lot of discussions started to formulate about how they were going to train their pastors. Most of the pastors to that point, and for a lot of the history, were trained at Spurgeon's Bible College in London and were sent to South Africa. Again, very, very much in line with their mission policy as well. But in 1914, the Baptist Union finally settled particularly on what a Baptist minister would look like. And they had some criteria for ministerial formation and a clearer idea of how that they were going to try and train those ministers as such. But ministry and ministerial formation happened largely in segregated ways. And so we see that the South African Baptist Mission Society was formed, and they trained what they would call the Bantu education as their focus. And so they kind of developed theological education primarily for black people within our context. And that continued through a number of different mechanisms. A number of different schools were started. The Ennals Institute was started in the Eastern Cape. Millard Institute in 1959 in Soweto, Fort White, others were developed. But the first theological college, and one that I'm privileged to teach at, was started in 1951 as the Baptist Theological College, which is located in Johannesburg. And so we continue to exist, and we'll celebrate 70 years in 2 years' time of faithful ministry. But again, we have seen a lot of changes and development in the light of how we train our ministers and how we work together for that. And so I'll allow my brother Lindsay perhaps at this time just to speak about Cape Town Baptist Seminary and some of the things he'd like to add to this as well from Southern Africa.
Thanks, Desmond. Yeah, so as Desmond said, there were different streams of Baptist influence in South Africa. The British Baptists, the German Baptists, the Indian Baptists as well came along. Then between 1900 and 1950, a lot of the theological education took place on a very informal basis, with ministers either being sent to England, coming from England, some of them joining what was called Rhodes University, well, still called Rhodes University in Grahamstown, until the Baptist Seminary in Johannesburg was formed. But because of this, what we might call the separate development policy that was unfortunately adopted by Baptists in South Africa, there were the training institutions, as is mentioned, the Millard Institute and the Ennals Institute, the so-called black pastors. The one in the Eastern Cape eventually developed into the Baptist Bible Institute that was closed down in the late 1980s, was actually sold to the Southern Baptists, became the Baptist International Theological Seminary. That was closed down as well. But our particular institution, Cape Town Baptist Seminary, was originally started in the mid-1970s as a branch of the Baptist College in Johannesburg. But prior to that, there was a lot of informal training that actually took place in Cape Town amongst the so-called colored people, people of mixed race origin, that took place informally into a semi-formal mechanism until some kind of formal theological education leading to a diploma in theology was started in Cape Town. So Cape Town started as the Western Province branch, became the Baptist Theological College Cape Town, and in 2002 became the Cape Town Baptist Seminary. Under the South African Baptist Mission Society, there were also endeavors to take theological education beyond the borders. So there were partnerships that developed, especially in Zambia, what was then known as Northern Rhodesia. So in places like Lumberland, Wally Hill, you know, there were partnerships in theological education. But I'm not aware of any other partnerships in theological education from South African Baptists in other parts of Southern Africa.
Thank you. Let me remove my hat before. Because in my country, you don't stand before older people with hat on head. Okay. I will just try to say something about theological education in West Africa, especially Francophone Africa, West Africa. Baptist presence in Francophone countries in West Africa started with Yoruba people who came from Nigeria and settled in those countries. And it was early in the 20th century. At the time, they invited the mission from the U.S. This was in the 60s and 70s. It was following this invitation that the school has been founded in Togo. It was called Baptist Pastoral Institute of Togo. Its mission then was to train leaders for Baptist school in Togo. The founder was Dr. Bill Bullington. That school changed or enlarged its vocation in 1977. And it became then West African Baptist School of Theology. And started to serve all the Francophone countries in West Africa. There was then a residential program, but also a theological education by extension. From 1977, the school was led by Dr. Bill Muckle. Many of those who are leaders now in Baptist churches, their first contact with theological education was through this theological education by extension. In 1999, following the change in strategy of International Mission Board, African leadership took over to continue the work of training. And at that time, they gathered and decided how to organize pastoral and leadership training among Baptists in Francophone Africa. And they decided that each country, each union or convention can create an institute to train people up to the high school level. And the school in Lomé will remain for the whole region with higher degree. And this started actually in 1999, I was among the first group, part of the first group of students when it started with the program of Bachelor of Theology and also kind of diploma. It's difficult to find a correspondence really in Anglo-Saxon system. And then, from there, Baptist Union in Burkina Faso, in Côte d'Ivoire, Convention in Togo and Union in Benin, each of them created an institute that's still functioning currently. And the school there in Lomé must concentrate on higher degree. It started also a high school level program to allow each Baptist Union and Convention to send people to Lomé to be trained. And after a while, this program has been stopped because each Baptist Convention and Union can now train people up to this level. In the school, the institute started in Benin in 2003. I can't say that I was the founder. The vision was not from me. The vision was there from a man called Aoga Auguste, who was at that time head of the Department of Education. And I took over from him. And actually, the institute started in 2003. The Institute of Togo started in 2004. I don't keep exactly the date of the other institute, but all of them, I think, started after 2000. This is briefly what I can say about theological education in West Africa, Francophone countries.
So let me just ask some of you, maybe we'll start with Reverend Kamau. What are the current trends that you see taking place in theological education in your part of Africa? What are some things that you think today are unique, different?
In East Africa, there has been a mushrooming of theological education. And basically what is happening within East Africa is that there are so many schools from the U.S. that are coming and are starting schools in different parts of Kenya and Tanzania, teaching people from within the churches. And the Baptist had already started doing that before this school started. And this is a challenge currently in that people do not care much of what they are getting apart from the paper that they are getting from whoever comes and says that they are offering theological education in this area or in this part of the world.
Okay. Ezrin Musonda, what challenges do you think Baptists are facing today in theological education?
We have several challenges, and mainly it has to do with the finances and the cost of education. And I think that should be the major aspect, because one, in the first place, our students are not able to fund their own education. It's amazing, because they can find money to go to secular institutions, but they are not able to find money for theological education.
Amen.
So that is something that is surprising.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we are having that challenge, because I think from history, when the mission began theological education, it began with a lot of subsidy. And what happened was that the area students received free education, and they had the free supplies of food and lots of other incentives. Now, when these graduates came out of seminary, they were thinking it was the same. When we asked for money, they were saying, what are they asking? They are trying to steal money from you. Because we went through free of charge.
Yeah.
And the mission is able to pay. And especially when they see mission staff on the faculty, they still think that the mission is still funding theological education. And that has become a big, big challenge for us.
Okay.
Because the very people that they are supposed to be promoting as the alumni, promoting the support of the institution, are the very ones saying, well, they are stealing money from you. They are not supposed to charge you that much.
Okay.
We didn't pay anything. And so that is one challenge.
Thank you.
And the second one, we have universities, you know, mushrooming all over. And lots of people are going there, and there is a competition. But we still are going on. We have not stopped because others are appreciating our work. And we have many of the Pentecostals appreciating what we have been doing. And so we have, among the student body, people that are coming from these other denominations because they know that the way we handle the Word of God is the best way that anyone can. And so they are coming. So that is a plus for us.
Okay.
But the challenge that I still find is not being able to understand the attitude of the alumni.
Okay.
To me, that is baffling.
Okay. Thank you. I was going to ask Dr. Harold, tell us, what are some progress and victories that you're seeing personally in theological education?
Personally in India, I think, listening to some of my colleagues, there's a new model that's come out called the Sadhu model. They found that there's been this disparity between scholarship and spirituality.
Okay.
Because most of the theological institutions, and we've got 7 Baptist institutions in India out of the 107 accredited evangelical institutions, and they found that, and most of the theological institutions are situated in the city, and so when the villagers come into the city, they get drawn in by the lights of the city, and after training want to stay in the city and not go back home. I think we all face that dilemma in the city. And so they developed this model called the Southern model, where instead of bringing the student to seminary, they take the seminary to the church.
Okay.
And they sit, rather spend 3 years with the student under supervision of a senior pastor. Basic theological education, and after a year and a half, the person under discipleship will then have to plant a church, and 3 years later has to pastor the church, and within 5 years enable the church to become self-sustainable.
Okay.
So for me, that's very interesting development. It's because of that development there's been a flourishing of new churches in India.
Okay.
I think the government is not very pleased with regards to that.
Okay. Okay. Let's ask Dr. Ringquist here. And by the way, I noticed when he took the hat off, he said, I think he said he thought you were older. That's what I heard. I don't know which is which. Lindsay, tell us this. Is there a need? This is an important question, I think. Is there a need for a specific Baptist voice in theological education, or is it enough for churches to just send their leaders to good evangelical schools?
I personally think that there's a need for both. I think the Baptist brand of theological education is a very, very important one. And I think we often sell ourselves short and also underestimate what Baptist distinctives, you know, could mean for the growing church in Africa, even in Southern Africa. You know, when you think about the way in which that growth is taking place, you know, so you have heard it been said before, you know, they say that Christianity in Africa is a mile wide and a few inches deep. And I think given the influence of various forms of Christianity, you know, we call it sometimes neo-Pentecostal, independent churches, etc., 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 there's this kind of new form of Christianity, this popular form of Christianity, prosperity gospel kind of Christianity that is having a very strong foothold. And I think that having a good Baptist theological education will hopefully inoculate us against that.
Okay, okay, that's good. Yes, please do.
You know, evangelical, the word evangelical is becoming a little porous. And there are so many groups that claim to be evangelical, but we will not really accept them as Baptist.
Okay.
So I strongly, very, very strongly feel the need for our own distinctives.
Okay.
Training our people in our own theological institutions.
Okay.
Now, for Baptists in Nigeria, you are not allowed to pastor a Baptist church, Nigerian Baptist Convention church, unless you have attended a Baptist theological institution.
Wow.
You could have all your training in some evangelical school or schools, but you will not pastor a Baptist church in Nigeria. You must go back to a Baptist theological institution for at least 2 years.
Wow. Wow. Well, keep the microphone because I want to ask you another question. Yeah. What do we need to keep doing? What are we doing right in Baptist theological education that we need to continue?
I think that we're maintaining standards. We should keep doing that. That's not lower standards because we want to meet. We want to open the doors to everybody. That's the first thing. We must maintain our distinctives. And we must keep to this. This is not directly from the question. Some years ago, the Nigerian Baptist Convention was very, very involved with theological education by extension. It was a big thing, and it was coming up real big in the Nigerian Baptist Convention. And all of a sudden, it died. Why? We trained people through theological education by extension because there were so many churches that did not have pastors. So we needed to train lay leaders to help those churches. But when we trained those lay leaders through theological education by extension, we said, okay, if you actually want to become a pastor after going through TEE, you have to go to a formal theological institution. But most of those we trained through TEE wanted to become pastors and be ordained. So they say, here we have a certificate. Why can't we be ordained? It became a problem. I think certificates are becoming too... the focus is certificate, ordination. We just want to do it so fast. We have in Nigeria, all the theological institutions in Nigeria are Baptist theological institutions. We have a coordinating body. We have the ministerial training board. It coordinates and maintains standards for all the Baptist theological institutions in Nigeria. I think we should continue to do that. And it also has an accrediting council, which accredits, or if you don't meet standards, they say you have been de-accredited. And we need to maintain that. The collaboration, maintenance of standards. And I think we should cut down the number of students we take in too. Maybe I'm speaking only for Nigeria. Our theological institutions are getting larger and larger and larger. I think Ogbomoso has about 1,000 students, about 1,200 students. That's large for theological education.
Everyone in here is thinking, wow, we want that. We want that.
Now, Dr. Audi's institution has close to 500. As a Baptist seminary in Kaduna, has about 500. That's too large. Because theological education is mentoring. We've done this for a long time. We've mentored.
That's good. Say that again. Theological education is what?
It's mentoring.
Mentoring. That's good.
And a mentoring is best when you have a small number. And it gets too large. It just becomes giving certificates to people.
Let me ask Director Alabwe, what should we do differently? What do you think we need to stop doing or change? Can you hand him the mic?
What should we do differently? I think recently in our school we went through a revision of our curriculum.
Mm.
Because we felt that the curriculum was too, let's say, theoretical. It didn't deal really with crucial issues in our society. So we tried to remove some courses and to introduce some new courses. Then I think that the whole mindset that is presiding to our leadership training, theological training, should change.
Okay.
The whole mindset that leaders in doing theological education, because we need to meet the needs that are on ground.
Hmm.
And our theological education should be more transformative. And this is the bigger thing I think we should be willing to change. But I know it's very difficult. We've been using this mindset for a long time. We've been trained in that. And how can we now change this mindset and be willing to do what is actually relevant to our context?
Okay, so more contextual. Would you say more African and less Western?
Yes, because we are, I often say to the student, are you going to minister in the US or in France or in somewhere else outside Africa?
That's
if
good.
It's your vocation, then you can still go with all this stuff that we just try to memorize and repeat. Right now, and I say our theological education now, talking about, do you call it efficiency in English? I don't know. What we put in our theological education is very big.
Mm-hmm.
But the result is not that, the impact is not that significant. So we need to do theological education in a way that the graduates, they can speak to their own people in a way that they can understand and live out the word of God.
Okay.
Right now, we are more prestigious. We look more after, we run more after prestige.
Mm.
We want to be people with bachelor, with master's, with PhD, and we forget about the real work, what the Lord entrusts to us.
Okay. Let me give the last one and the hardest one to Desmond Henry. Okay.
I think that there's a part that some things we should do slightly differently. We train people and it's like training a medical doctor. He's finished his class work and they send him straight to the theater with a very serious case to deal with by himself. Training in theological institutions is good, but I think that some kind of working under a pastor who is in the field already should be part of theological training. We try to integrate it in Nigeria, that every student from his second year in seminary is attached to a local church. But I think we can add to that. maybe the last semester, one whole semester, you can attach students, final year students also, let them work with pastors. Let them get credit for it. Working, go work with the pastor. Stay with him. You are an associate pastor for one semester. Work there. When you do that, we give you credit for it. Practice to also attract credit. I think so.
Okay.
Because it's too fast for many of them. You just finished theological training today. Tomorrow you are senior pastor. Just the next day.
Sure.
I think it's too big a jump.
Okay. Let me ask the man from Johannesburg. You need to be a prophet right now if you can change your title. And we need to know, what does the future hold for Baptists and for theological education? What do you think will come in the future?
Great question. I'm not a prophet.
Okay.
Or a son of a prophet. I do work for a non-profit, right? What does the future hold? Yeah, that's a tough one. I think in our context particularly, what we've seen is a definite trend online rather than on site. And so for every one student on campus, we now have five students online. And so that's really great. And so we've partnered with some institutions. We've built our first video recording studio on site. And so we record all of our lectures and put it online and have a great online program. I think there's more to be said and done in terms of the use of technology in theological education, but it has its limitations, which we do understand. Now, the other aspect that I think we need to look at is, again, the training of lay leaders, as was mentioned earlier. That's going to become increasingly important, and probably two out of every five students that we have are there to be trained from the local church base. And so elders, deacons, people who serve in the leadership of the church, and so that's a great blessing as we see them coming in. Particularly in our highest certificate of ministry and highest certificate in theology programs, which are one-year programs, they're being trained and kind of feel that is an adequate preparation to help them engage at local church level as well. I think also that's helpful to our Baptist churches, because a lot of people coming to our Baptist churches may come from Pentecostal churches or other so-called evangelical churches, and these studies really help ground them and root them in terms of Baptist distinctives. Another trend that we're seeing, equal to what you were saying in your context there, my friend, is relating to the Pentecostal and Charismatic movement. 65% of our student body, as an example, is now not Baptist. And primarily Pentecostal, Charismatic, some Methodist as well, interestingly, and one or two other denominations, AFM, Assemblies of God. And they come to us for training because, one, we're accredited. And so in our constituency, accreditation through the government agency of the Council on Higher Education is a big thing. And I think this is going to become an increasing necessity throughout Africa, where because of the proliferation of these colleges from the US and from everywhere else on earth coming to offer degrees, charging people money for giving them substandard, sub-quality degrees sort of overnight, there's going to be a lot more regulation in terms of this in the future. So we're going to have to learn how to cope with that and maintain high standards and ethical standards of practice and pedagogy, which I think are important as well. But I do think that indicative of where we are now, a great sign of what we face in the future is unity. We're better together than we are apart, right? And so unity is important. And we're seeing this in our constituency, even between our Baptist seminaries in South Africa, and Baptist factions. As an example, the Afrikaans Baptist Seminary and the Baptist Convention of South Africa, which is primarily black, which left the Baptist Union a couple of decades ago, are all now, and in the last 4 years, have come and are training their pastors through BTC, which is a wonderful thing. So we're seeing there's a definite unity of different groups and factions that's happening in our generation, and that's something that we can certainly work on and improve going into the future.
Amen. Thank you. Can you give these experts a big hand, please?